Hello, welcome to Unreal Bluegrass. I'm Steve Martin. Our guest today in the second hour is Grant Molloy Smith. Grant is recognized far and wide for all of the great music that he does, that he writes, that he records. Just released a brand new album, Appalachia American Stories. Grant's going to talk about that album, all the great bits of culture that he goes back to pick up and reinterprets, puts them into the 12 cuts that make up the album. This is really a fascinating discussion. Every facet of Appalachia life, you're going to get a taste of it. We're going to start off from that album, Down the Hatchabee Road. Then we will begin our discussion with Grant Molloy Smith. Most enjoyable time. Grant, thanks so much for your time. I'm sure that I might have taken a little more than some do, but there were so many opportunities and avenues to discover, and that's kind of what happens here on Unreal Bluegrass. We like to get the questions answered. To the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard a tune, Down the Hatchabee Road, a new song from my guest today, Grant Molloy Smith, his album, Appalachia American Stories. Grant, I'm so happy to have you on the show today. We've talked about doing this for a while. I've known who you are. You've contributed to Unreal Bluegrass with a seasonal song that I fell in love with, Fly Possum Fly, with you and Emmy Sunshine. So now I have right in front of me this brand new album and all this great information that comes with it. Welcome. Thank you so much. Welcome to Unreal Bluegrass.
Oh, it is my pleasure to be here, Steve. Thank you very much for having me today, and thanks to all your listeners for being here.
We started with what is the second cut on the album. There's 12 cuts on the album, and we started with a nice upbeat tune, Down the Hatchabee Road. I want to talk about, you have all these points to touch on, Grant, that go throughout the album and in this incredible book. Booklet of information that to me rivals, I've always thought that Smithsonian Folkways, because of the nature of that label, they have more ability to flesh out stuff and give you packets of information. And so this is on par with what I would expect from Smithsonian Folkways, which is just an extraordinary effort every time. So this is
That's a big compliment.
Well, yeah, listen, it's a lot of good reading, and the music is great. Let's talk about this song just a little bit. Then I want to talk about Grant Molloy Smith for the listeners that don't know you. So talk a little bit about Down the Hatchabee Road.
Yeah. Well, yeah, this is kind of a fun song. I wanted to have a toe-tapping song, and I had to tip my hat to bluegrass. It's not, strictly speaking, a bluegrass recording, of course, but it's meant to be in that spirit. And in that spirit, you know, there's a lot of – I've witnessed them many times myself, the full immersion – river baptisms that happen throughout Appalachia and the South in general. And I just think they're so wonderful, and they're so, if you're part of one, it's really unforgettable. And I just wanted to capture the joy, you know, of people who have that faith, and they just go down in the water. And we're going to do one tomorrow, actually. We're going to shoot a video for that song tomorrow.
Oh, you really? Okay.
And, I'm going to go in the water myself. But I'm not going to bring my expensive guitar.
Bring
the last day for it.
Yeah, really. So it's like an explosive joy. I mean, I think the listeners have probably seen it, or at least familiar with the concept. Coming back up, it's like an explosion of happiness and joy. And I think that's what it's designed to be. But the song captures that. It's a very upbeat, as opposed to a very solemn occasion. It's a very upbeat song and story that you're telling. And I think it's a great tune to pick out.
That's the right word. It's joyous, and it really is. It's a celebration.
It is. It is so much, and so much about the album. Let's talk a little bit about the album, the feel, the culture that's expressed throughout the album, not just with the written words that you give it, but you are so sensitive to so many issues and so in touch with so many issues that are, I think, peculiar to Appalachia myself. I'm not from there. I have relatives from there. I'm not that far from there. But you pick on so many things. You touch on so many issues within the album concept and then with the material that you send, including, and this is a very true thing, the position of the matriarchal society, or the reverence to the grandmother or the mother, or that position that they take within the family. The coal mining is... coal mining is a very complicated issue, and you explain that so well, because it's some people who have never been in a coal town, they would say, well, why would you go down there? But when the reality is, that's all you can do.
I tried to present it from the point of view, like looking through a coal miner's eyes after spending a whole lifetime of doing that hard backbreaking, sometimes literally backbreaking work that they do and did and do. And not get into so much the politics of it, but to look at it as a an expression of a person's dedication to work, because he provided for his family
That's right.
50 years.
That's
you know,
exactly
and
right.
He's proud of that. He should be proud of it. Everyone, work is its own reward, I think, and there's nothing wrong with work. And so I put the politics aside and just talked about the human equation.
You did. There's a few songs that touch on that issue. There's also songs that don't, like you say, don't just settle on an issue. It's always within the context of the culture and the livelihood and the lifestyle that's in that area. But guys who work in the coal mine, that's a good job to have. Now, they know going in a lot of times, and this should not be part of the job, shouldn't be the sentence of also having lung afflictions or possibly being buried. Mm-hmm. Some of your songs are about being covered up in coal. Mm-hmm. But they know all those things, but they also do it because it's the best way, as opposed to people from the outside saying, move away, go away. Well, where would they go and what would they do? And that's a good job
exactly.
to have, you know?
Exactly. You know, a lot of Appalachians did. They went up the highway turning 3 in the 50s and 60s, you know, looking for
sure.
all the industrial jobs we had up there. But I think what you'll hear in the album is the sense of homesickness that so many of them had. You know, Appalachians have their own way of playing music. They have their own way of eating food. They have their own way of singing and dancing. And when they are out of their element, you know, they're out of the hills and the hollers and they're up in the Midwest or wherever, anywhere mm-hmm. else, there's a siren cry, you know, that where they feel like they need to go home. Not maybe not every single person, because no two people are identical, but you know what I mean, by and large. And I'm not even from there myself, but my family is.
Right.
Starting with my mother going back into the very late 1700s, and it's a whole part of my upbringing, and it's why I do the music that I do. That's from Appalachia, and I could feel that homesickness in so many of my relatives that went up to Detroit, for example.
Well, yeah, Detroit,
or Toledo, or somewhere.
Detroit, you know, Middletown, Toledo, all parts of Ohio and north as they cross the river. But you know what's happened so often, and I can't say that I witnessed this, but I heard of it, and I live right on the border of Northern Kentucky and Ohio. So the bridges, all the river bridges are there and all the river traffic. And what I always understood to be happening is that on Friday nights, headed south for many years, were those people that had gone north for the industrial job, but they were always going back home on the weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that's strong, and that's a long way to drive.
I think the next to last song is called Lord Take Me Home, and that's exactly that.
That's right.
It's a blow-by-blow of a man driving back down the 23 out of Ohio into Kentucky, headed for his family for the weekend.
Isn't that, and it's an amazing that, you know, their jobs in the north were, I guess they were better, you know, I don't want to make it a gilded. I don't want to paint a picture of life in a factory as being, boy, that's great. It was pretty miserable. I guess it wasn't as openly
dangerous.
Not as openly dangerous, but you know, it wasn't as dark. I guess they had lights on, but it was just perceived as a way to try to get away from that danger and provide for the family at the same time. But man, they always went back home.
Mm-hmm.
They always went back home.
There's something about the hills, you know, in the record, and as it. Because it copies real life.
Mm-hmm.
The mountains are a character in this story, and they have to be. You know, that's the nature of the people kind of reflect, sort of like a, you know how water just fills up the container and takes on the shape of whatever container you put it into. I think to a large degree, people kind of do the same. They become part of the hills and the hollers, you know, the ups and the downs, the yin and the yang. That's the perfect metaphor for all of life. But I think particularly in Appalachia, which is a misunderstood part of our country. You know, it's one of the most beautiful places in the country, and the people are some of the greatest people in the country, but it gets a bad rap sometimes. There's a lot of stereotypes out there from Hollywood and so on. So it's misunderstood, and I just wanted to do whatever I could do to rectify that somewhat, to make that as right as I could make it in my own tiny little way.
Well, it's a gorgeous presentation of all those issues. And you talked about the mountains, and there is a song on here, We Got the Mountains. But back to a point that you made, sometimes you're the holler, and that refers back to grandmother. I think it's your grandmother. I read this. Mm-hmm. Help me on this. The comment is kind of what you were saying, that sometimes you're the holler, sometimes you're the whatever, but
sometimes you're the hill.
Sometimes you're the hill.
Sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down.
Exactly what it means. But that comment wouldn't come from anywhere else, and it only makes sense. But, you know, and it is. There are songs, Grant, you know this, about where the daylight is only like from 10 to 3. It's because they're in the bottom of basically a ravine, so you don't see the sun at 6 and doesn't see it. So it's a very dark, there's a lot of darkness, there's a lot of Boy, it's hard. It's just hard, and it's hard, but they love it. I mean, for someone who's not been there, you would never think that's where I want to move to stake my claim on life.
That's true.
I mean,
that's
hard.
Probably true.
That's hard.
Yeah, yeah. But in fact, you know, I'm going up there tomorrow. I'm in Eastern Kentucky right now. Eastern Tennessee right now. I'm going up to Eastern Kentucky, where my family's from, in mostly Perry County, but in the surrounding counties. And I'm just looking forward to being with them again and playing this for them. Some of them have heard it, but most of them haven't. So that I think that's going to be. I hope they like it. I hope they don't throw me out and make me leave Kentucky.
I don't think they'll do that. If they do, I'm a Kentucky colonel. You give me. I was a former prosecutor, and I still got my Kentucky colonel card in my wallet somewhere. So,
wow.
Call me. We'll take care of that for you. Like that.
good to know I got connections.
Yeah. Well. So you play so many different instruments, and you add so many different voicings. So many instruments that I think are maybe recognizable to that indigenous sound of music. And by that, in the bluegrass world, we maybe think too much of banjo sound as being the quick Earl Scruggs. Let's just say the Earl Scruggs method that everybody does and plays. But the banjo there was a different instrument. Fiddles are a different sound. They have this mountain sound. There's not this real bright, quick sound. It's a very heartfelt, soulful music. The instruments may be the same, but the music is different.
Yes, very, very true. Very much true. My grandma used to play for me all of her old records. She called it her mountain music. And when I was a little kid, you know, and I was also listening to the Beatles, because the whole world, you know, was listening to the Beatles when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
So I was torn between those two worlds, and I love them both. They both had an influence on me. As I got older, I gravitated more to my real roots, since I'm not from Liverpool. But, you know, I just love that sound, that Bill Monroe sound, the high lonesome sound. And I have a high voice, you know, just the way God made me. So and Hank Williams, too, my voice is a little similar to him. I'm not comparing myself to these people.
No, I understand.
In terms of the acoustics of my voice.
Right.
I would never do that, but I like the sound, and I think it does feel, like you said, it feels real. It is real. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, my music doesn't come out of a computer or out of some software. It's real people playing real instruments, gathered around and making music together and having a good time.
It's not. Let me relate this to you, not to make it about me, but whereas I live in northern Kentucky, most of my family is from 40, 50 miles south of here in Grant County, in that area. And as a child, my dad would go home, in a sense. That's where he grew up. Wasn't that far. It's not like coming back from Dayton or Detroit to the mountains. And it was a farm that he was experienced life on, and it was dark at dark time because there weren't a lot of lights. And so what they did was everybody played music. Great-grandfather pulled out a fiddle. Somebody else had a guitar. There was a mandolin. Now, it wasn't bluegrass. It was not bluegrass. It was just mountain music and music that they would play in a roadhouse. So it's all acoustic, and it's not the most brilliantly played, but it was, boy, I tell you what, it lit up the house, and there were people dancing and stomping around, and it was joyous, and they would always end it with the circle. Will the circle be unbroken? That's how we come in. So they kept that same sense to it. And that's my only connection to what I believe happens with the music in the part of the state that you're going back to and that you have relatives. And there's something about that. There wasn't TV, there was a party line, so nobody was talking on the phone. There was an organ in the corner that my great grandmother played, and everybody just played songs. And so, you know, and they had fun.
Exactly. It's part of the community. It's like the front porches that are or back porches that are sorely missing today, where music was part of everyone's lives, and you didn't have to be an expert, and most people weren't very good anyway. It doesn't matter. It's part of the community and your sharing of your family, and people weren't glued to their little screens and their big screens like we all are, including myself. I have to admit, today, watching movies and, you know, Netflix and all the rest of that, people were playing music and talking and having some tea or something else and just being together.
And they didn't for guitars and mandolins or stringed instruments, they didn't have a lot of choices. They bought Black Diamond strings from the drugstore or from Sears. Yeah. And the instruments might have come from a Sears mail order shop downtown. And they just kept them. They kept them forever, and they'd be beat up. The only time they changed the string is if a string broke and they couldn't stretch it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I mean, so that's my way of looking into your music, is that I put myself there. Your compositions and your storytelling are so right in touch with what's going on there. And this album is all, this new album, Appalachia American Stories, is such a gorgeous treatment of that whole feeling that I'm doing a horrible job of describing, but you do so well, and the music is so great. It's just a wonderful collection.
Well, thank you. Well, that's a high compliment coming from you, Steve.
Listen, you said you're going back. Well, thank you. You say you're going back. What will be the moment as you're driving to your, let's say, your ancestral home, what will be the moment where you have that feeling of that wash over of you, that you're back to where you have those connections? Is it a street or a mountain or a stream or what?
Boy, it's a combination of things. I think I usually get one when I cross the state line or when I get on the Bluegrass Parkway. I think tomorrow I'm going to come up 75 and I'm going to stop in Berea.
Okay.
One of my family histories is his surname is Caldwell. I have McIntyres and Caldwells and Caudles and Cornets and Rushiers. But Caldwell is my on my mother's father's side, and there's a cemetery right off the 75, I think, in Berea. So I'm going to stop there, and I've never been there. And my grandfather's there, my mother's father's there, and about 1,000 other Caldwells. That's going to... I've been doing my whole ancestry thing, too. So I'm looking forward to taking pictures of both the headstones and, you know, then putting them pictures into my ancestry program. But then a few hours later, I'll be in Hazard and pulling up to my first cousin's house, who was my Grammy, my mother's mother, who was the one who introduced me to mountain music, as she called it. She was her favorite aunt. So now her niece is in her 70s, and she's a wonderful lady. And I'm so looking forward to seeing her again. I saw her a few months ago, and I've got third cousins and first cousins and second cousins and all kinds of folks around there. And
well, where's the point when Grant Malloy Smith? Because this happens to me, and again, I don't mean to make this about me, but I'm trying to relate to you. When I travel back home, not my home, even my parents' home, or by the way, there's a whole bunch of Caldwell. You're right, it's pronounced Caldwell. There's a whole bunch of Caldwells in my family. So don't be surprised if there's some connection.
Might be related.
Could very well be. And Mises, there's a lot of Mises in the family. They're down around Somerset. But anyway, so when you get out of the car and you see your family or that home that you know someone lives in, that's your family, there's a change that occurs.
It is.
It affects. I don't know how to explain it, but there's something that all of a sudden you're that person again, or you're that person that was supposed to be.
Yeah. Exactly, and if my mother hadn't moved away, I would have grown up there.
Yeah,
and I get that kind of wistful feeling about it. I mean, it wasn't my home, but I feel like, it could have been, and I've still got so much kin there, and that the whole region is such part of my DNA, literally,
exactly.
But also because of my music, it's what I do, and it's cumulative. You know, I drive in, and I go up and down the hills. And I look down, I see there's a 90-degree drop, and there's no guardrail, and I go, yep, back in Kentucky. Here I am again.
You know, what comes back to me so quickly is not so much the sound of my speech, but the phrases and the words that I use comfortably that I don't use when I'm not down there. All of a sudden, it's the phrases, and it's not that I talk like I'm from, nothing wrong with people from the South, but I don't speak that way, but the phrases are just colloquial, and they become... That somehow that all comes back to me the minute I step back in those areas, and I just think that must be doubly so for you.
It does. It really does happen. And I come home, and after a week there, and my wife goes, "Is that going to go away anytime soon?" Like, what is it? Well, you're doing it again. I'm like, don't worry.
It'll subside. That's funny. That's right. It just kind of you get absorbed into it. And the album has so many, and the booklet that came with it, the one that I got, is just great photographs and writing. I know that you put all the words in there and you selected all the stories, not just the lyrics, but the stories leading up to one. I want you to talk about a song right now that I think is real pivotal to what we're talking about. We're talking about the coal industry. If you're just tuning in to Unreal Bluegrass, I'm so happy to get a chance to talk to Grant Malloy Smith, new album, Appalachia American Stories. I want you to give a lead into one of the songs on the album, The Coal Comes Up, because that phrase has a meaning that needs to be explained a little. Then we're going to listen for that, and we'll come back and talk to you some more.
Yeah. Well, this song was the one I knew I had to write when I first got the idea to make the record about Appalachia. I knew I had to have at least one song about coal on there, but I wanted to be really personal, like looking right through the eyes of a man who's been down in the mine his whole life. And now he's older, he's busted up a little bit, he's got the miner's lung like his daddy did, but he's proud of his life of work. He provided for his family, you know, ever since he had a family, which was a long time ago. And I wanted to give that sense of the worth of work and sacrifice, and give a sense maybe also of how hard it was, because it is really hard down there. I think everybody knows it, but I wanted to express it through his voice to give people a sense of what that's all about, and to pay respect to the countless men and now women that go down in the mines and do that hard work.
Well, that's a good description. Let's play then for the audience of Unreal Bluegrass from Grant Molloy Smith's new album. We're going to play The Coal Comes Up, and Don't Go Away, I'll Come Back. I have more questions for Grant. You don't get away that easily. We have more to discuss. So let's cut to this song, and I'll come right back to you, Grant. There, that was the tune that Grant gave a wonderful description and introduction to, The Coal Comes Up, from Appalachia American Stories. I'm telling you, the story and the feel that you capture in these 12 songs, there's just so much to it. And I don't want people to think that this is going to be an album when they get it. I don't want them to think, well, it's going to be an album about, not sad, but, you know, kind of not uplifting. The first tune, Down the Hatchby Road, very happy, very uplifting tune. But there's songs on here that are not just, are connected to the culture but aren't connected to coal, may not be connected to religious things. The two songs right away, Boone's Five and Dime, is one that I want you to talk about, because there's a family connection, and it's a story that a lot of people will connect with.
Yeah. In fact, my grandfather, my father's side, he ran a tiny little grocery store up in the hills, the Appalachian Hills, for many years, and I didn't know him then. It was before I was born. But when I was maybe 12, he would drive me up into the hills, and he's long since retired. But we would stop by his old customers. I didn't realize it till later that that's who they were. And these were really poor people. I mean, I've never seen, at that point in my life, had never seen anybody so desperately poor as these people. But he just loved on them, and they loved on him. And he always would, he and my dad would go fishing and fill up a big styrofoam container with the lake fish and river fish, and get some loaves of bread from the Piggly Wiggly, and we just go up and down the hill all day long, like 6-7 hours, until it got dark. And then he would just give out until all the fish and the bread were gone, and he just paid visits on everybody and sit there and drink tea with them, and I'd play with their kids and run around like, you know, boys do. And
yeah,
that left, I didn't understand it at the time, what was happening or why he did that, but later when I realized what it was, it was so powerful to me that here's a man who ran a little store. You know, these people couldn't afford anything, and he'd give them credit, and when he couldn't afford it, but he did it anyway. And there's so many people like him, not just my grandfather, but there's countless people that run little stores up and down in the hills and the hollers. And I find that's a part of America that's disappearing, you know, as we have chain stores everywhere. But you can still find them in the small towns and in the, you know, up in the hills. You can find them.
Yeah.
And this is part of America that we're slowly losing, and I wanted to capture a little piece of it before it's all gone.
Well, you
I hope
did.
It's not all gone.
No, I think it's headed that way. There'll be some places that hang on. You capture it really well, and you make a point. And you, as you're writing about this, this is not a company store. That's not what you're talking about at all. You're talking about a local neighborhood, Five and Dime. And where people could pay when they could pay, not all the time, but if, hey, I'll pay you. And they would come back. If they were able, they would come back and pay. And if they weren't, chances are the owner or the proprietor of the store knew that that probably wasn't going to come back again. But they also know the person probably needed it more than they did in the till.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I think part of that goes into it. They like to get paid, but
sure, sure. No one wants to go, because if you don't get paid too much, then you can't run the store anymore, and it closes.
That's right.
So, but still, there's a generosity of spirit in a lot of folks, especially when they're not under some corporate umbrella that doesn't allow for that. You know, when you run your own place, when you're your own boss and it's a family-owned store, then you can make allowances and use your heart.
There is I think slowly there are still some family stores like that that have a little bit of that, but you know what happens a lot of times with bigger stores like that that are family connected, eventually they reach a generation where they don't have an interest or want to be there. They don't want to grow up in the business anymore, and they shut it down or close it and move on because they have other things in their life. So that's part of the attrition also. There's a song on here, Grant, called I Found Faith. And I want to ask you, is that a revelation to you? Is it a story about you or a story about what we discussed in Down the Hatchaby Road as far as a regular occurrence?
Yeah, it actually is. It actually is my story. Because I never was, like the lyrics say, I never was much of a church-going child. I really wasn't.
Yeah.
But it came to me later in life. And just by watching other people have faith and what it did for them. And I'm not one to go around tell people what to believe or not to believe, but I just wanted to share that sense of it may be wonder in a way, but also just feel, you know, reverence for something greater than yourself, which I think is important, whether you call it God or what, it doesn't matter what you call it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it makes people, it keeps them humble and acting in a selfless way, than normal, if they believe in something greater than themselves. I think that's important for people to do. And again, I don't care, it doesn't matter what religion it is, or even if it is an organized religion, I just think it's better, people act better if they don't think that they're the center of the universe.
Well, and, it also gives them a little bit of a compass. Now, again, whatever that compass is, they can decide, but as opposed to just being this bundled up id that wants to please themselves all the time, they think there's a moral compass they have to at least try to aspire to for whatever reason. So I agree with you on that. There's also Lord Take Me Home. The song In This Twilight is kind of along that vein as I listen to it, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you know, the whole country has been going through an opioid crisis over the last 20, 30 years, and it, not only in Appalachia, but all over the country, but it has hit Appalachia particularly hard. And I wanted to address that, but not in a terribly negative way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we have to be realistic about things, and I think some of the isolation that some people have in the hills, you know, the reason people moved to the hills in the beginning in the 1700s is because they liked the isolation.
Right.
You know, they were from northern Scotland. They were from the hills. Many of them, like my ancestors were, and they liked it.
It looked familiar. It looked familiar when they looked around. It was a little like the highlands that they came from.
Right.
Yeah.
But then, you know, a few hundred, well, more than a few, 400 years later or 300 years later, it's a whole different culture that we have today. I mean, drastically different with the internet and airplanes flying through the skies and all the rest of that stuff. And it has tended, the isolation can also be a double-edged sword. It can hurt, too.
Mm-hmm.
It can leave some parts of the countries behind, maybe in terms of education or opportunities in general. And that leads to, that hopelessness leads to drug addiction. It's one of the leading causes.
If
people don't have a job and they didn't get a good education through no fault of their own, they do tend to turn to drugs, not just in Appalachia. I'm not.
Oh, no.
But it has hit Appalachia hard, and it makes me sad. And I just wanted to have a song on there just to address that, but in an uplifting way, because the chorus is beautiful, and it's meant to show it's someone coming out of going through withdrawal, basically.
Yeah.
And they're on the way out of it. But I do describe some of the bad moments that they went through in the verses. But the choruses are meant to be. Have that sense
positive.
Of exuberance, like you've coming out of a dark tunnel and
exactly.
back in the light again.
Exactly. There was a TV series called Justified that touched on this topic.
Love that
wasn't
show.
That great?
I've watched that whole thing three times through.
I probably have too. Well, the writing was so good, and then you had these criminals that were like Shakespeare, a guy. So, but that
Boyd Crowder.
Boyd Crowder, thank you so much.
Poetic.
Oh,
for
golly!
20 minutes.
It was incredible.
Great actor, but great writing.
Yeah, it was.
Walter Scoggins or Coggins. He's a great actor.
Yeah.
I love Timothy Olyphant. I thought the whole show was great.
It was phenomenal. It was phenomenal, and it was in that part of Kentucky, and a lot of the problem was what you're talking about, the drug issue that just hammered that part of the country.
Yeah. I think every episode they drove back and forth from Lexington to Harlan County, where a lot of my family.
And it did, and it only took them about half an hour, which I thought I love everything about the show about how quickly about how quickly he can get from Hazard to Lexington to the marshal's office. It's like, you know, they don't even stop for
back
gas.
And forth twice in the same day.
How'd
you do that?
But that touches on this story, the problem, and it was it just became overpowering, and I don't know why that part. It's everywhere. There's pockets everywhere where towns, as you read, have been devastated, absolutely devastated. But that part of Kentucky and that part of America was really just destroyed. I mean, there's so, and I don't know. I don't think it's something having to do with the people, the nature of the people. I don't know if it's the ease of the prescriptions or the, or I don't want to get too judgmental about the companies that made it or why they thought that was a. But it was it wasn't that someone was looking for. A cheap high, I don't think. It just became overwhelming. Before they knew it, they were addicted.
The thing is, those artificial opioids like fentanyl are so unbelievably addictive that most people, like the guy, the character in the song of mine, he got addicted totally accidentally, like a lot of people
do.
A motorcycle accident, and he was on these opioids, and he could not get off them. Mm-hmm. And the medical system is not set up to get you off anything.
No.
And he finally just had to go cold turkey and you know, go through that agony. And that's, a lot of people can't do that.
No.
Very few people can do that. It's horrifying.
It's incredibly powerful. And it's connected back to working in the coal mines. You get stuff beat up all the time, and you get bruises, and you start. If it's easy to give you that to make it through the day, it is. All of a sudden, you're addicted to something that you never, ever dreamed could happen like that.
Yeah.
Be that powerful.
I'm not blaming the people at all. Some people are just drug addicts, but the vast majority got hooked accidentally, or they were doing recreational drugs and they got hooked and they couldn't get off of it.
Yep.
And there has been a big problem with two big problems. One is the legitimate pharmaceutical companies pushing this stuff.
Right.
You know, and a lot of them have got convicted of felonies for what they've done by the government, had to pay billions of dollars in fines. But then there's a huge illegal trade coming in through the southern border, and I'm worried that that's ramped back up again now that there's, you know, kind of a resurgence of that stuff coming across, and that these opioids are coming across our southern border, and that's kind of Americans.
And since we're on this, and we'll get back to the music in a section, but since we're in a minute, so we're talking about this, Grant, talking to Grant Mavoy, so this is an issue that needs to be discussed. When those drugs are not any sort of quality control, if they come in from out of the country, who knows what's really in them? And all of a sudden, they might think they're taking what they took before, but it might be something that's been more. And that's the ones who die driving down the road with a needle in their arm and run off the roads. Those are the ones that are just overwhelmed because it's not even anything they were used to.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You don't know what's in them. They could be laced with other terrible things.
Yeah.
They could be three times more powerful than you think they are. They can have rat poison in them. Who knows what you're putting in your vein?
Well, now that we've completely brought everybody down,
let's talk about something nice.
Let's talk about gas station chicken. I want you to get to that.
Because now that's a good. You know, a good piece of fried chicken will cure
it. It will. Sometimes you got to let the fried chicken work. Tell me about that song a little bit, and then we'll get people up again, and I'll get you back on your way. Let's talk about gas station chicken, which we all know of.
Well, you know, if you drive around, I'm sure you know this. There's gas stations that have fried chicken, but it's kind of processed, and it's pre-frozen, and they just microwave it. That's not what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I'm talking about a small, usually family-owned gas station that has a tiny little corner where somebody's fixing up. They're making real fried chicken with buttermilk and flour and brown eggs and you name it, and they're really making it. And I'll tell you what, it can be some of the best fried chicken out there. You wouldn't think so coming into a gas station, but you'd be wrong. You'd be wrong, and I've driven across this country 50,000 times, and I know something about what I'm talking about.
I think you're right, and I think the cooking style is something that you might have seen as a kid, that I might have seen as a kid.
Oh, my mother made the best fried chicken, except for her mother, and maybe her mother before her. It's not terribly healthy for you, but you just got to have it once in a while.
You got to. And I think the idea was that by the time you ate that on the farm, you had been out working harder than anybody who goes to LA Fitness during the day. You had been so there was a little bit of a trade off there. You could eat that stuff if you were that's what I think it was. And those guys lived to be healthy and strong forever unless something more dire happened. But so I want to lead into listen, there's so many great songs. We're gonna leave with Gas Station Chicken, which you've talked about. We could have, Grant, we could have talked about the red haired girl from Hazard, which I think has a special significance. It might be about That's family related, isn't it?
Yeah, that's my mother. She was the red-haired girl from Hazard.
Yep. Boy, that's a great story. There's so many. We could cover all of these. I can't keep you here forever, but I just want the people to know that there's 12 songs on this Appalachian American Stories from Grant Malloy Smith. Grant, first, before we cut to Gas Station Chicken, at which point I'll say goodbye to you, where do they find this?
Well, the best way to get it would be to go right to my website, because from there you can decide whether you want to buy the box set with the book, and you can get an LP and a CD, or just the book and the CD with the box. Or if you'd rather get it digitally, you can do it there too. But everything is there on my website. So it's just my three names, Grant Malloy Smith. You don't have to put hyphens between them.
Okay.
You can. You don't have to. But Malloy only has one L. So if you just go to Grant Malloy, M-A-L-O-Y, Smith.com, and then you'll be able to click on Appalachia right there and learn more about it. You can hear samples. You can watch a video. You can look at all the – I've got some nice critical reviews from the for the record already.
And, sure.
Well, you can read it all and decide what you want to do.
And let me just suggest this. I love written material that comes with recordings. This book is I've read it, and I've gone through it, and I picked things that I didn't catch the first time, and there's the biographies in the back. This is one of the better printed materials, and I know that you wrote it and put it all together, and stylistically you did it. But, boy, it's a wonderful reference just to go back and sit and read. So, I mean, I would want people to be able to see that, whether or not they can buy it, but I want people to be able to find it and look at it.
I almost didn't even release it digitally because I really want people to – you know where it comes from? My favorite kind of shows to do and my favorite kind of shows to go to are when the songwriter is playing his or her songs and they're telling the stories behind the songs.
Exactly. That's right.
And that's what I tried to capture with this book, to give you that experience – without cluttering up the recording with me talking for 10 minutes. I wouldn't like that. But I wanted to give some, you know, like we used to have liner notes when
exactly.
You used to buy an LP and you'd get some information. I wanted to do that, but multiply it by 10.
Oh, boy.
You know, give
very, very dense, very, very enjoyable.
And,
plus, I got a plastic horse, Grant.
And I owe you a lump of coal.
You owe me a lump of coal. But lump of coal I get, but I don't get the horse connection.
What? Kentucky horses.
Oh, okay, all right, because I didn't see a song that had horses in it.
You're right.
Am I right?
It's mentioned in the last song, We Got Mountains.
We Got Mountains,
it's
all right.
In the first verse, it mentions we got bluegrass for horses.
Okay, well, I missed that. I'm sorry, and I apologize for missing that. But now you're never getting it back. It's going to stay right here.
Oh, that's your horse. It doesn't eat much. Just one grain of rice a year, I think, is all it needs.
Grant Malloy Smith, I'm so glad we got a chance to chat. We've talked about doing this off and on. By the way, I'll give credit to Fred Anderson, who's my friend.
Yes.
And I know that you know Fred, and I just
I sure do.
We talk often, and when COVID everything breaks up, we're going to get together for lunch again. He just lives across the river from me, so I appreciate Fred's involvement.
Well, I'd like to come on that lunch if
you. Yeah, well, we will. You know what? We'll get out and about, and we'll give you a holler and see if we can set something up. So let me let you leave, Grant. We're going to leave with Gas Station Chicken, which is everything that Grant said it was, and you'll listen to this song, and you'll be gone. Thanks, Grant, for participating and being part of Unreal Bluegrass. I really appreciate your time.
Oh, I appreciate yours, Steve. Thank you so much, and thank you all.
Well, we'll see you down the road.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye. Bye.